We were created as God's image to point people toward wanting an experience with God. So we were created with a purpose that separates us from the rest of creation. And that purpose is defined in Genesis 1:28. It says, be fruitful and multiply. This is God telling Adam and Eve. They're in the garden. Everything's perfect. It's beautiful. They're newly created. And God's telling them, this is why I created you. He said, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and govern it. Reign over the fish of the sea, the birds in the sky, and all the animals that scurry along the ground. We were created to co-rule with God. He created us to be a bridge between him and the rest of his creation. But you know what? Sometimes when things are going really good, we get a little bit bored and we lose focus, right? Adam and Eve did the same thing. Think about it. They're living in this beautiful place. They walk with God daily, like literally are like in the garden hanging out with God daily. All of the food that they need is there. Everything that they need in life is provided for them. They don't have to work for it. They don't have to fight for it. They don't have to get a job. Everything was perfect. But then they decided, well, maybe I could be something more. I mean, maybe it's not enough that I'm created to be the image of God. I want to be like God. I want to become a God in my own way. So I'm sure most of you guys know the story of Adam and Eve, so I'm not going to recap that today. But when Adam and Eve became dissatisfied with being the image of God, and they took it into their own hands to be something more than they were created to be, they began something that we are still dealing with today. Humanity has a humility issue that's caused us from the beginning of time to be motivated by our own selfish desires. Think about it. You can look all through history and you can see how people have put their own desires, how they have put their own motivation, how they put themselves in front of God. And when they do that, what happens? Does it end well? No. That's why we have wars. That's why we have drama. That's why we can't get along with each other. That's why we are unreconciled with one another and with God. But you know, God gave us that desire to succeed. He gave us that desire to improve and constantly be creating and growing and changing and improving the world around us. So it can't be bad, right? The desire itself is not bad. It's what you choose to do with it. It's a process of learning how to balance that desire to make something more with being humble and showing love to one another. So that was kind of week one. So week two was a really interesting topic that I was really excited about. We called it creating idols. And Jared warned us about the danger when we start creating idols in our lives. So what does that mean? You know, an idol, when you think of an idol, you usually think of like some little statue, or like I always picture like a gold Buddha or something. Like I always think of like a statue or something physical that you look at and you place the title of God on that thing. You worship that thing like it is a god or a representation of a god. But an idol can be anything that competes with God for your focus, your faith, and your worship. Anything. You know, I was talking to somebody the week after Jared's message, just a few days after his message, and they were telling me about how when they lived in Thailand, there's a tradition there of being accepting of other gods. And most homes have a shelf on the wall in their homes. And on this shelf, they place figures, things that they see worthy to worship. and they ascribe the title of God to these things. It's called their God shelf. Creative name, huh? So what happens when somebody that has a God shelf in their house converts to Christianity? When they accept Jesus, they literally saw the shelf off the wall and burn it. It's a big ceremony. It's their way of symbolically saying, I no longer will serve the gods on the shelf. I'm removing these idols from my life. And now there's only one God that's worthy of my worship. And there is no statue to represent him. Because he created his own idols in his image. Don't mishear me. I'm not saying we worship each other. We don't worship each other. Because an idol, an image, directs the attention to the supreme being. So what can serve as an idol in our life? Because I'm not saying that you guys have a God shelf in your house. I love the idea of that ceremony of symbolically removing the idols from your life. But most of us aren't going to have something like that that we can literally tear down and burn to remove it from our lives. So what are things that we have in our lives that compete for our time and our worship and our love? Our job, our marriage, our relationships, our kids. What about video games, our phones, drama? Anybody addicted to drama, don't tell me that. I'll judge you. We get addicted to things. We get addicted to food. We get addicted to alcohol. We get addicted to things, and we become a servant to those idols that we allow to rule us. Now, a lot of these things that I mentioned are not necessarily bad on their own. Food's not bad. Food is good. I'm already thinking about my lunch tacos. But if we allow these things to take a place in our life that competes with who God is, competes with our time, our love, our worship, then that's when they become an idol and we need to remove those from our life. You know, there's something that I feel like I need to address today, and it's probably going to sound just a little bit weird. There are many, many people, and I've seen this growing up in a Southern American church, that have created church to be an idol in their lives. Now, when I say church, I mean the little C church, like the buildings, the denominations, the different places on each corner that you're going to drive past in this town. The little C church, not the big C church, the ecclesia, the body of Christ, the people. There's a difference. But people have made the little C church an idol that has become worthy of worship in their minds. They have placed it on a shelf up high where if something happens, if the church betrays them, if the church lets them down, then they cannot see the difference between the church letting them down and God letting them down. You know, I was thinking about that this week because I saw a couple Facebook posts from people that I used to attend churches with. Different churches. Two posts, two girls, two different churches. And they were saying, they were explaining why they no longer believe in God. Now, when I read these posts, because I read these posts, it hurts to read them, but I am genuinely interested in knowing what drives people away from a loving relationship with God. People that I used to worship with, people that I used to do life with, people that I prayed with. How can they, who has experienced the same God I have, choose to no longer believe in him? So I read these posts and I read these comments and it breaks my heart. And at first I'm thinking, the church has let them down. But then I stopped myself and I thought, you know, the Big C Church did not let them down. the little C church let them down. Because the little C church is people. It's made up of people that make decisions that build their kingdoms in a church building. Now, I'm not saying that church hurt's not real, because I actually related with some of their reasonings. I experienced some of those things with them. And yet here I am. I'm more invested in church than I've ever been. What's the difference? And I sat and I puzzled with it for a while, thinking, what is the difference? Why am I more involved and they are done? I was blessed to grow up in a home that divided the church from God. That the church may be an expression. The church is a place that you go to worship God. The church is a thing that you do on Sunday mornings, but God is life. And so that division's always been in my mind. So if you don't have that division in your mind right now, I'm telling you to put that division in your mind. Church leaders, big secret here, they're people. They're imperfect people, just like everyone else. And that's a lot to live up to. And when a person inevitably lets you down in some way, then they present a warped image of Christ to you. But if you think that what they did is coming from God and not a person, then you can confuse that in your mind. Losing your faith in people should never cause you to lose your faith in God. Do not let a church become the idol that you worship in place of God. Don't believe that coming to church on a Sunday morning is your relationship with God. And please do not ever expect perfection from me or anyone else that you see in a leadership position here, because every single person at Project Church is broken in some way, because we're all people and we're all imperfect, and there may be a time that I let you down. I'm going to try not to, but no promises. In week 3, yeah, we're still in the recap. In week 3, Matt talked to us about what it looks like to rule and reign as the image of God on earth. So I said before that we are co-creators, that we are meant to co-create with God. So God gives us creation. He gives us the earth and all the raw materials, and he says, do something with it. So we are meant to create and cultivate and use these raw materials to make something more. Matt used the example of the 3 managers. You guys know that parable? I'm not going to go through the whole thing today. But the boss gave 3 bags of gold to 3 different people and left on a trip. And when he came back, 2 of them did something with it. They doubled what was entrusted to them. But the 3rd, he handed back exactly what he was given. He had buried what he was given, and he preserved it. It was no less. It was exactly what he had been given. And you know what the manager said? He called him evil. You're kind of like, what? Like, I mean, if somebody gives me something and I return it back to them in the same condition, at the same value as what they gave it to me, then what? How does that make me evil? Well, it's because he had been lazy with what he had been entrusted with instead of investing it and increasing it. And God used this parable as an example of what the kingdom of heaven is. We have been given our gifts, our time, our talent, our resources, everything that we are has been entrusted to us. And God is saying, do something with it. What can you create? What can you become? Who can you invest it in? That's what it means to rule and reign, to co-create with God. And then Matt left us with the challenge of of considering what gifts and talents and resources we have in our lives that God's entrusted us with that we've buried instead of using to create and cultivate. And that brings us to today. I know that's a very quick recap, but like I said, if you want to listen to the messages, they're on our website. But I wanted to just kind of give you guys the highlights of the past 3 weeks so that we can come to the same place today of understanding what it means to be created in the image, going through the process of thinking about what idols we need to remove from our lives, and recognizing that we all have gifts, talents, resources that we have been challenged and encouraged to do something with. So up until now, we've been focusing on what we were created to be and what that should and should not look like. But unless you believe that you are worthy and capable of living up to being God's image, none of that matters. So today, we're going to talk about what it means to believe and to be the image of God, applying all the things that we've learned about so far to our life today. So we're going to start by circling back. You guys are getting dizzy with me today, I can tell. You guys know I like to circle back to Genesis a lot because it's the beginning of everything. Adam and Eve followed their own ambitions rather than yielding to God's intentions. You know, and we've talked about how there's countless examples of that through history, of people putting their own desires, their own ambitions before other people's, before other people in their families, other people in the world above God. People allow selfishness to keep them from living up to the responsibility of being God's image. And you know, we see a lot of these examples when we read through the Old Testament. You guys like to read through the Old Testament? Yeah, you can be honest. I don't. Like, I really don't. It's exhausting because you have the beginning and everything's beautiful and perfect and they're like, chapter 3, whoops. And then it just goes downhill from there. And, you know, there was a few weeks ago, Rylan, my youngest, he's 3, he had his kids' Bible and he was flipping through it. He can't read, of course, so he's flipping through it, looking at the pictures, and he's reading it. And as he flips the page, he goes, bad boy, bad girl. Bad boy, bad girl. Bad boy, bad girl. And I was like, he's not wrong. Like, because the Bible is filled with messed up people. People that have everything in their heads. They have all the knowledge of what to do, what not to do, of who to be. They have the laws memorized, but their actions are constantly tripping them up. So we read through the Old Testament and we see story after story of people just choosing their own desires over what God has in store for them. And we think, I mean, I would never do that. But we do every day. We make decisions that are similar to what we have in the Old Testament. But you know what? Those were the chosen people. That was the covenant family of Abraham that we're reading about. God hand-selected them to be his representation on earth. And if they can't do it, what hope do we have? It can be exhausting reading through it and recognizing that it's not going to be easy. But we actually have a lot more hope of getting it right than they ever did. So let's look in Isaiah. Isaiah was a prophet in the Old Testament. And during his time, things didn't look good. The world was pretty dark. His people were in exile. They were being ruled by a very rude king who was very murderous and, you know, made a lot of bad decisions and demanded that they worshiped his gods and everything. It was a dark time for God's people. But the prophet Isaiah was given a word by God, and he said in chapter 11, verse 1, out of the stump of David's family will grow a shoot. Yes, a new branch bearing fruit from the old root. So I have a picture here. Have you guys ever seen this happen? Anyone? I mean, if you've gone on a hike and you're at least a little bit observant, you've probably seen something like this happen. You see a stump or a log or something that just looks dead. Like it stops serving its purpose. It doesn't look like it can support any kind of new life or new growth. But there's something growing out of it, something bright and green and fresh and new and alive. And that's what he's saying here. He's saying the covenant family of Abraham, it looks dead. It looks like there's no hope. It looks like there's not a chance that anything new can come out of this, that there's no way that new life can be supported by it. But one day, there's going to be somebody born into the covenant family that will restore the image of God on earth. Y'all know who he's talking about? He was talking hundreds of years before the birth of Jesus. He's saying there's going to be somebody born, and that gives us hope. But how could Jesus succeed when everybody else fell? Now, Jesus was a man, right? He was a man born into a Jewish family. He was a carpenter's son. He was poor. He lived in a time where the government was unstable. That sounds familiar. He was a man that dealt with issues in his culture just like everybody else. He could have failed. But why didn't he? Well, Isaiah in verse 2 goes on to say, "And the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord." Oh, that's the difference. He wasn't just a man, because the Spirit of God came to earth with him. He was equipped. He was empowered. He was encouraged by the Spirit to make the right decisions. He came to earth fully equipped to withstand the selfish motivations that had plagued humanity since the fall of man, all the way back to the Garden of Eden. So if you have your Bible or your app with you, go ahead and flip to Colossians, because we're gonna read a little bit from Colossians today. You know, there was a big split of time between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And we forget about that sometimes. We think, well, it's really dark, and then this guy like Isaiah, he said something hopeful, and then boom, Jesus was born. No, we have to realize there were generations of people after Isaiah that still had to believe in his hope without a sign. Hundreds of years passed. So let's fast forward from Isaiah, and let's look at what the Apostle Paul wrote about Jesus after he had been born, after he had lived, after he had died, and after he had resurrected. So Paul says in Colossians 1:15, "Christ is the visible image of the invisible God." The image of God came to earth in the form of a man. And it goes on to say in verse 20, "And through him, God reconciled everything to himself. He made peace with everything in heaven and on earth by means of Christ's blood on the cross. This includes you who were once far away from God. You were his enemies, separated from him by your evil thoughts and actions. Now, he has reconciled you to himself through the death of Christ in his physical body. As a result, he has brought you into his own presence, and you are holy and blameless as you stand before him without a single fault. I'm going to pause right there, and I'm going to get off on a little tangent. I'm sorry, guys. You have to believe that. You have to believe that when Jesus died and when he rose again, he reconciled you to God. He served as our bridge, allowing us a personal relationship with God. There is nothing that we can do that can separate us from the love of God. There is nothing you can do that will cause God to give up on you. Because if you believe that, then as a result, he has brought you into his own presence and you are holy and blameless as you stand before him without a single fault. So how do we get there? Jesus is the visible image of the invisible God. His life serves as our example of how to live. He gives us stories, he gives us actions, he gives us teachings that tells us how to behave as the image of God. So we study the Word. We study the Word to learn how to live like Jesus. His death, it triggered the curse reversal and freed us from our idols. When he died, he broke the curse. What's the curse? The curse. We're going to go back to the Adam and Eve story. Back in Genesis, the fall of man. Everything in the garden was perfect until they made a decision to separate themselves from God's presence. That was the beginning of the curse. Jesus died to break the curse. That's a whole other message that we'll get into another time. His resurrection, he made it possible for us to have a personal relationship with God. There is no longer a need for a middleman. He serves as the eternal middleman. There's no longer a need to go to a priest to be able to talk to God. There's no longer a need to listen to just a prophet to hear from God. We can now hear from God on our own 100% of the time. His presence, his relationship is accessible to us all. In short, Jesus is our hope that we can be more and we can do more. So is that it? We believe in God. We believe in our heads. We even know it in our hearts. And then, woo, we're the image of God. It's awesome. Anything we do, we're good because we're the image of God. It's not quite that easy. It's actually quite hard. But by studying the life of Jesus, by accepting what he did for us, by reconciling ourselves, by allowing God to take over our hearts, that's a good, solid first step. See, Jesus taught how to live in God's kingdom. He said things like, the last would be first. Love your enemy. To lead, you must first serve. The unlikely, the marginalized, those that are under the foot of those in power, those are the ones that are going to be blessed. It's all backwards. Jesus flipped everything upside down. No longer do you have to live by your own selfish ambitions. Because Jesus showed us how not to. He gave us the right decisions to make. When we learn to live like Jesus, we begin to restore the image of God on earth. So, accepting Jesus is the first step. Living like him requires a change of focus and priority. Colossians 3:1-4. It says, since you have been raised to new life with Christ, set your sights on the realities of heaven, where Christ sits in the place of honor at God's right hand. Think about the things of heaven, not the things of the earth. For you died to this life, and your real life is hidden with Christ in God. And when Christ, who is your life, is revealed to the whole world, you will share in all his glory. You know, we sang a song this morning, and like one of my favorite lines in it is, fix my eyes on the things that I can't see. This just said that when you're living for God, you live in an invisible kingdom. It's kind of a thing you got to kind of wrap your mind around. I'm trying to decide if I want to go off on that tangent. Nope. We're going to talk about that another day. But we live in an invisible kingdom. We serve an invisible God who we don't have a statue on a shelf to look at and place worth on. Because all the worth belongs to God. So we've got to fix our minds on what we can't see. So what that means is you look around the world and you think of all of the things that could keep you from succeeding in life. You find reasons to harm relationships. You think of reasons to stop yourself from succeeding. God has empowered you. He's equipped you. But we allow the things around us to scare us. We are no longer slaves to fear. We sing that. Do we believe it? Are we afraid to take that position, to step in to the reality of what we were created to be as co-creators with God? What are we allowing to be our masters? What idols are we serving? What are we putting up on a place that is competing with our time and our loyalty and our faith? We have to shift our perspective from thinking about our lives, how things affect us, to thinking about how we affect the kingdom. But I'm a really practical-minded person, so I want to know, like, steps. Like, what does this look like? Like, how do I do this in my day-to-day life? So Paul writes, Colossians 3:5, put to death the sinful earthly things lurking within you. Have nothing to do with sexual immorality, impurity, lust, and evil desires. Don't be greedy, for a greedy person is an idolater, worshiping the things of this world. Y'all, it's a daily decision. It's a daily decision. There are days we're going to get it wrong, but there are days we're going to get it right. And as we have those days where we get it right, and we have more of those days and more of those days, we are restoring the image of God on earth. It goes on to say, put on your new nature and be renewed as you learn to know your Creator and become like Him. We have to get to know our Creator. If you want to be like someone, you have to get to know that person. We have to be in the Word. We have to spend time with God. We have to talk to Him. We have to listen. And as we do that, we will learn what it is to be the image. You must clothe yourself with tender-hearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience. Make allowances for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Whew, that one's a hard one. Remember that the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. Above all, clothe yourself with love, which binds us all together in perfect harmony. Does that all come naturally for you guys? It does not come naturally for me. It is a daily decision. It is a decision every moment of choosing to place the will of God above yourself. But we're not expected to do it on our own. Because this all sounds really hard, right? We don't have to do it on our own. You see, when Jesus came to earth, he was equipped with the Spirit of God came with him to earth. And now God's presence came to rest on earth once again. You know, at the very beginning of Genesis, it says that there was nothing but waters, and the Spirit rested over the waters. But then man made a decision, and the Spirit was no longer there. Not for everyone. But then the Spirit came back in the form of a child. You know, God could have sent a king. He could have sent an emperor. He could have fixed the world like that. But instead, he sent a child to live and grow and learn and make mistakes and do the right things and make decisions every single day to teach, to live with, to do life together with people. The Spirit of God came back to earth in the form of man. And when that man was killed, the Spirit left the earth again for just a minute. But then he was resurrected. God came and he resurrected the dead. And then he released his Spirit back on the earth. And now the Spirit is resting over the earth again. Not everyone knows it. Not everyone feels it. But you can. The presence of God is accessible to everyone. We are no longer Jew or Gentile, slave or free. We are all equal in the sight of God, and his presence is here for us. You know, back to Isaiah, it says, and the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him. But we're the image of God too. So let's rephrase this just a little bit. And the Spirit of the Lord will rest on us. The Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. You know, the same Spirit that equipped and empowered Jesus to make the right decisions, to be the image of God, to not serve any earthly masters as idols, that same Spirit is available to us all.